Ever heard someone say, like, they should throw the book at them when someone breaks a promise?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, but, like, legally speaking, when does a promise actually cross that line and become a crime? Well, that's exactly what we're going to be diving into today with this fascinating case, People v. Ashley.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this one.
Yeah, it's this 1954 California Supreme Court ruling that really, like, changed how the law looks at fraud and deceit.
I think especially in like financial matters, right?
Exactly. And it all revolves around this kind of wild story about this guy, George Ashley, who basically swindled a couple of elderly women out of their savings.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're talking like elder financial abuse.
Well, yeah, kind of. But get this, it all starts with this company, Lice Estate, LTD, and Ashley sets himself up as this like big shot business manager.
Okay, so he's presenting himself as like a legitimate businessman.
Exactly. And his targets are these elderly women, like Mrs. Russ and Mrs. Neal. They get caught up in his web of, well, basically lies.
So how did he actually pull this off? Like, what was the scheme?
Well, Ashley was a master storyteller. Like, he'd weave these tales of incredible investment returns.
Oh, so like promising the moon?
Pretty much, yeah. But it was all a carefully constructed facade. He had this whole theater project they used as bait.
A theater project, like he was going to produce a play or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Claimed their investments would fund this big production. But, surprise,
There
surprise.
was no theater project.
Nope, just empty promises. And it gets even worse.
Oh, no. What else did he do?
He promised these women that their loans would be like backed by valuable property.
Okay, so some kind of collateral to make them feel secure.
Yeah, but it turns out he didn't actually own any of the property he was promising.
Wow, so he was just making stuff up left and right.
Yeah, and get this, to pressure Mrs. Russ into extending the loan repayment, he actually drove her to the edge of a canyon.
Oh my God, are you
It's
serious?
dead serious. Imagine the fear she must have felt. I mean, that's just like next level manipulation.
Wow, that's chilling.
So the question here really is, did the courts actually see these broken promises as an actual crime?
Right, like where's the line between a bad business deal and something that's actually criminal?
That's the crux of it. Because back then, the law mainly focused on like misrepresenting existing facts.
So like claiming you own something you don't, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But the Ashley case really forced the court to like grapple with this question. Could a promise about the future, something that hasn't happened yet, could that actually be considered a criminal false pretense?
That's a tough one.
So it sounds like this whole case kind of hinged on this idea of like a promise with no intention of ever being fulfilled. Could that be considered a lie about a present fact about someone's current intentions?
Right, like, are you lying about what you're planning to do right now, even if it's about something that'll happen later?
Yeah, and ultimately the court decided that yes, a promise made with absolutely no intention of keeping it is essentially a lie. Like you're misrepresenting your true intentions in that moment.
Oh, so like, if I promise to sell you a car, I know I'm not going to actually give you. That's not just a broken promise down the line.
Right.
That's a lie right now, disguised as a promise.
Exactly.
Okay, I get it. But how did the court actually prove that Ashley never intended to keep his word? Like, how do you prove what's going on in someone's head?
Well, they looked at a few things which became super important in defining this kind of fraud. Like, what were the promises themselves?
Okay.
Did he offer collateral he didn't actually have?
Makes sense.
And probably most importantly, what did he do with the money?
Oh, right. Like, follow the money trail.
Yeah, where did the money from these women actually end up? Did he invest it like he promised?
I have a feeling I know the answer to this.
You probably do. Instead of funding this imaginary heater project, Ashley basically funneled all that money straight into Lice Estate, LTDs, operating expenses, and, well, his own personal needs.
Oh, so he basically just pocketed the cash.
Pretty much. That kind of blew his cover when it came to proving his real intentions, you know?
Yeah, that's not a good look. So, does this mean the court basically said, okay, any promise made with the intention to deceive is now a crime? Like, did they set that precedent?
Well, you're on the right track, but it wasn't quite that simple. The court didn't just make a big sweeping declaration.
All right.
They actually established a very specific set of criteria, five factors, to determine whether a promise actually qualified as a criminal false pretense.
Five factors. Okay. This is where it gets really legally interesting. Can you walk us through these factors and how they applied to Ashley's case?
Absolutely. Let's break down each one of these factors and see how they played a role in the court's decision in People v. Ashley.
Okay, so the first factor is pretty simple. Was there actually a promise made?
Right, that's easy enough.
In Ashley's case, that was pretty obvious. He made all those promises to those women about, you know, returns on their investment, even that fake collateral.
Yeah, no shortage of promises there. So what's the second factor?
Well, the second one really gets into the nitty-gritty. Did the person making the promise actually intend to keep it when they made it?
So it's not just about whether the promise ended up being broken.
Exactly. It's about their state of mind, like right at that moment they made the promise.
Okay, I see. But, I mean, that's going to be tough to prove, right? Like, how do you get inside someone's head and figure out what they were truly thinking?
Yeah, and that's where the other factors come in. They kind of help build a stronger case, show if there's a pattern of deception going on. The third factor is all about whether the promise was a big factor in the victim's decision-making.
So, like, did the promise actually influence them to hand over their money?
Right. Was it a driving force behind their actions?
Well, in Ashley's case, it seems like those promises about the theater project and the collateral, those were definitely the main reasons those women decided to invest.
Exactly. And the fourth factor builds on that. It asks, did the victims actually rely on the promise? Like, did they really believe what they were being told?
And did that belief actually cause them to do something, like invest their money?
Right. Again, with Ashley, it's pretty clear those women believed him, and that belief led them to make decisions they wouldn't have otherwise.
Okay, so we've established that he made these promises, he probably didn't plan on keeping them, and these women relied on his word, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So what about the fifth and final factor?
Okay, the fifth one kind of circles back to that idea of intent, but from a broader perspective. It basically asks, was there a general intention to defraud? Like, was this a calculated scheme to take advantage of these women?
Mm-hmm. So how did they prove that in Ashley's case? Like, we've talked about a lot of shady behavior, but how do you connect all the dots and say, okay, this wasn't just a guy messing up, this was intentional fraud?
Well, remember how we talked about how Ashley used the money for, you know, his personal stuff instead of that theater project? Well, that, along with those lies about the collateral and those high-pressure tactics, it all starts to paint a pretty clear picture. The court saw that and concluded, look, this wasn't just a broken promise, this was a plan to deceive.
It really shows how tricky this whole thing can be, you know? Trying to separate legitimate business setbacks from actual deliberate fraud. Where do you draw the line?
It is a tough one. And there's another important distinction the court made, too. Ashley's lawyers tried to argue that for a false pretense to be criminal, it had to be the only reason the victim lost money.
Oh, interesting. Like, if there were other factors at play, then the false promise couldn't be the basis for a crime.
Exactly. But the court rejected that argument. They said the false pretense just needed to be a material factor.
Meaning
it had a real impact on the victim's choice, like a significant influence.
Ah, okay. So even if there were other things going on,
yeah,
if that deceitful promise was a big part of why someone made a bad financial decision, then bam, that could be grounds for a criminal charge.
Exactly. And that's one of the big reasons People v. Ashley is considered such a landmark case. It really helped clarify this whole area of the law and made it easier to go after those more complex financial crimes where those deceitful promises are the weapon of choice.
So it was about closing a loophole, basically.
Yeah. The court was saying, look, we can't ignore these situations just because they're about future promises. We've got to keep up with how these con artists are working.
Makes sense. The law has to evolve, right? Keep pace with all the creative ways people come up with to scam each other.
Right. Otherwise, they'd always be one step ahead. It's kind of like, you know, updating your antivirus software to deal with those new sneaky viruses.
I like that analogy. Okay, so we've got Ashley, guilty based on those five factors. But were there any dissenting opinions in the case? Like, did any of the judges disagree with the ruling?
Actually, yeah. There was one, Justice Schauer. He agreed that Ashley was guilty, but he wasn't totally on board with the reasoning the majority used.
Oh, how so?
Well, he felt the case could have been decided without expanding the definition of false pretenses, like just focusing on Ashley's lies about stuff like that fake collateral.
Okay, so he wasn't saying Ashley was innocent, just that they didn't need to shake up the legal definition to get a conviction.
Right, exactly. And he was worried that bringing broken promises into criminal law could get kind of messy. You know, like, what if it leads to too many regular business disagreements getting treated as crimes?
Yeah, like every time a deal goes sour, someone ends up in court facing charges.
Yeah.
That would stifle a lot of legitimate business, I imagine.
That was his concern. He thought it could create a climate of fear, where people are afraid to even make deals because what if it falls apart and then suddenly they're facing criminal charges?
That's a valid point. But the majority of the court obviously disagreed with him. Why did they feel so strongly about expanding that definition?
Well, they argued that the law had to adapt to the changing landscape of fraud. They saw that con artists, like Ashley, were finding loopholes, ways to exploit the system.
So if the law just stuck with the old definition, it wouldn't be effective.
Exactly. And by including those deceitful promises as part of false pretenses, they could tackle a wider range of schemes and protect victims from those new tactics.
So it was about recognizing that the way people deceive each other is constantly evolving.
Yeah. It's like they were saying, look, ignoring those deceitful promises would be like giving a free pass to all the sophisticated con artists out there who know how to play the system.
It's like a constant game of chess, right? The criminals make a move, the law has to adjust. So this case, in a way, helped to modernize the law, give it the tools it needed to deal with the realities of financial crime in a more complex world.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. They were basically closing a loophole that could have been exploited. And with that, they sent a clear message. If you break a promise with the intent to deceive, you can face real consequences.
Powerful message. So People v. Ashley really had a lasting impact on the legal landscape. It clarified this whole idea of false pretenses and set a precedent for holding people accountable, even for promises about the future. But I'm curious about the practical implications. Like, how did this case change how lawyers approach cases like this involving fraud and deceit? Did it change their strategies?
That's a great question. The impact of People v. Ashley went way beyond just this one case. It really had a ripple effect on how both prosecutors and defense attorneys handle fraud cases, even today. It really did. For prosecutors, People v. Ashley was a huge win. It basically gave them a new tool in their belt, you know?
Yeah.
They could dirt stronger cases against people accused of fraud. Now they could really zero in on proving that intent to deceive.
Even if they didn't have that classic, like, smoking gun evidence of a traditional false pretense.
Exactly. Things like, you know, patterns of lies, misuse of funds, those manipulative tactics, those all became super important.
So it sounds like this really empowered prosecutors to go after those more complicated financial schemes. Like, they weren't just stuck trying to prove someone lied about something concrete. They could actually go after the thought process behind the whole thing.
Exactly. It really shifted the focus, you know? But of course, on the flip side, defense attorneys, they had to adjust to this new landscape.
Right, because suddenly false pretenses had a broader definition.
Right, so their strategies had to shift. They'd often try to challenge the prosecution's evidence of intent.
So, like, poke holes in the idea that their client never planned to follow through on their promises.
Yeah, like maybe argue that their client really did mean to keep those promises, but something happened, something unexpected that threw a wrench in the works.
Or maybe downplay how important the false promise actually was.
Right, like try to convince the jury that even without that promise, the victim would have made the same decision.
So it became less about did they lie and more about what did they mean to do and how much did that lie really matter?
Yeah, it definitely got more nuanced. People v. Ashley really shifted the focus from just proving a lie to really dissecting the whole story. Like, what was going on in the defendant's head and how did that impact the victim?
It's fascinating how one case can have such a ripple effect, you know?
Yeah.
Change the whole game for everyone involved.
It really shows how dynamic the law is, how it has to adapt to keep up with the times. It's like a living, breathing thing, always evolving.
Like that game of cat and mouse we were talking about.
Yeah.
Criminals try to find new ways to take advantage, and the law has to adjust to catch up.
Exactly. And in this case, the court was basically saying, we're not going to let these sophisticated schemes slide just because they're dressed up as promises about the future. We're going to hold people accountable.
It's a powerful reminder that the law is there to protect people and that it's willing to change to make sure that happens. So for our listeners out there, especially those in the legal field, what would you say is the biggest takeaway from People v. Ashley? What should they be thinking about after this deep dive?
I think the most important thing to remember is just how blurry that line can be between, like, acceptable business practices and what crosses over into criminal deceit.
Yeah.
This case is a stark reminder that when you combine a broken promise with the intent to actually defraud someone and they actually get hurt, there can be serious consequences.
It really highlights the importance of honesty and transparency, especially in the legal world.
Absolutely. Like, it's not just about being nice, it's about protecting yourself too. One wrong step and you could find yourself on the wrong side of the law.
So it's not just about knowing the rules, it's about acting ethically. We all make promises, But we have to think about the weight of those promises and what could happen if we don't follow through.
For sure. And I think it's important to remember that the law, while it's always changing, it really does reflect our values as a society. Cases like People v. Ashley show that we want to hold people responsible for their actions and that we value protecting those who are vulnerable.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation. We've really gone deep into this world of fraud and deceit, all stemming from those broken promises. It's amazing how one case, People v. Ashley, continues to shape how we understand these complex financial crimes.
It's a cautionary tale for all of us, really. A reminder that integrity matters.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive. We hope this discussion has shed some light on the legal side of broken promises and how the law is constantly working to keep up with those evolving schemes.
Definitely. A great case to learn from.
And if any of you out there have come across similar cases or have thoughts on this topic, we always love to hear from you. You can find us on all the socials. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and remember, knowledge is power.